This is Careers in Podcasting, helping to build new careers in new media. For more information, visit our website, welchwrite.com/CIP. That's welchwrite.com/CIP. This is a panel discussion from the UCLA Extension Writers Program Annual Writers Fair. The Independent Vision, writing and producing personal stories for film, television, and the internet, with Douglas E. Welch, Roseanne Welch, and Jonathan Titer. For more information on the UCLA Extension Writers Program, visit uclaextension.edu/writers.
Welcome very much. We're very pleased to have you at the Independent Vision, writing and producing personal stories for film, television, and the internet. So you notice we put up some .com happy things here so you can contact us or check out what stuff we have online. My name is Roseanne Welch. I've been teaching at UCLA Extension for 6-7 years. I started when I was on a show called Touched by an Angel. I normally do a 1-hour television writing class, and that's what I enjoy doing. That was my background, Picket Fences, 90210. I came to UCLA because I used to be a high school teacher, so I have some friends going, you know, this will be like a really cool thing to do on the side when you feel like it. So, and then I just got really wrapped up in it. So it's a really great place to take classes if you haven't yet. I'm very pleased that you all came today. This is a really neat thing they offer, like a little free day of stuff. That's nice. So many months ago, I had started paying a lot more attention to what's happening on the internet because my husband, who will speak shortly, is a huge computer internet geek guy.
Hey!
You know, you gotta call him like you see.
Yeah, geek
and
is sexy.
Exactly, geeks have won.
The geeks have won. That's the phrase.
It's very important to note how the prevalence of the internet has come into the entertainment world. Obviously, if you watch any TV shows, if you check out their websites, you see that they all have websites that give you all the episodes, the Bibles. You now have blogs from all the writers. You can hear what the writer of last night's Grey's Anatomy had to say about how the experience of writing that script. Any show has that now. It's a very interesting world. So whatever level of writing you want to be involved in, you're going to have to be involved in the internet. That used to be a have to. Now it's a fun thing, but there were people who were afraid of it. So I'm guessing y'all aren't afraid of it or you wouldn't show it up today. So I'm really excited today because I happen to have been lucky enough at a friend who was nominated for a Primetime Creative Emmy, and they were last night. They're going to be aired on E! Next week. And so I went to the Creative Emmys, and they gave the first ever Emmy Award to an online show. This was the first year the Emmys allowed you to nominate yourself and your online show. And Tom Green of TomGreen.com won for a daily show they did. It's kind of a little talk show goofy thing. And I sat there going, it says online show on the screen, and this guy is holding an Emmy Award. How incredibly cool is that? And he produces and creates this piece all by himself, a couple of friends, that sort of thing. In a funny way, I think this concept of, we'll talk about podcasting, we'll talk about all the different levels of how to put your material out there on the internet. This is allowing us, once again, I think, to go back to the days of vaudeville, where if you could train a few fleas, or you had a wife like Gracie Allen, you could just go from town to town and entertain people. And there wasn't a whole lot of in your way with the agents and the studios and all this stuff that blocks your ability to put your stuff out there. How that helps us, even if we're already with the agents and all that junk, is that we can create extra work that the agents may not support that becomes sort of an online, like, you know, my rep is I do chick shows, right? So if I want to prove I can do lots of people blowing each other up, they're not going to hire me to write that show right now, no matter how many specs I write. But if I do a little tiny 10-minute movie where there's some really good people and limbs flying and that sort of thing, there's my example right there.
Ooh.
So it gives you a chance. I know. Yeah. So there are many new opportunities that we're very excited about. So really that's what we're here going to talk about today, the idea that you want to have a personal and interesting story, you want to have intimate things to say. That doesn't mean, you know, it has to be X-rated, but that they're emotionally interesting and engaging. And that stuff will find an audience, whether it finds an audience of 10 or 100 or 100,000. Those people are out there looking for different things. The networks aren't the heads of everything anymore. Yeah, they're the heads of huge, huge honking money, but you can get behind them. And we've got friends who run podcasts who've been able to get meetings at HBO and Disney and other places. They don't have agents yet. But those people are perusing the internet going, hey, that guy wrote something really funny. We should meet him. We might want to see what his next idea is. So this is like a whole new frontier that we're just now allowed to play in. So that's kind of what we want to talk about today. We're missing one panelist. He may show up a little later. We'll see. So I just briefly, so that's who I am, right? So we came to UCLA and said, let's do something on new media and podcasting. And so that's why Douglas Welch, my husband, and I are going to co-teach this particular class that I'll have Doug tell you more about. And then we're going to talk to Jonathan Pydor, who does independent films and has done a lot of distribution and has some information about how we can use the internet, YouTube, all these things to get our material out there. So that's kind of who the three of us are. And we'll go sort of, you know what? I talked a lot, so I'm going to make you go last.
Okay, that's fine.
Only to be fair. We'll let Jonathan go next. We want to do a little 2-minute interview, who we are, so you know, and okay. Then we'll do
who are you, Jonathan?
I got to stand.
I know, it's a little cramped.
I am so squished back there.
I know. Yeah, really, go to the side there.
All right, my name is Jonathan Pyle. I've been writing for 30 years. I first came out here in 1979 with a lot of dreams about working business. I got jobs working for Lorimar, Universal Studios. I did a pilot for ABC, I even got a big movie made, and didn't even get invited to the screening.
When
I first came out to the business, or got the idea I wanted to be in the business, I met a fellow named Andy Lewis when I was living back in Boston, and he had wrote the movie Clue. I don't know how many people are familiar with it. Excellent movie. He couldn't get any more work. He was a guy who was very successful, he couldn't get any more work, and he told me, he said, you know, if you want to be in the business, you have to go out there. But remember this, they don't like writers. And if they could do without them, they would. But they found they can't, so they barely tolerate them. And that is true. I've been in a meeting where a producer and executive were arguing over some dialogue or something in the script, and I said, well, does anybody want to know what I think? And they both turned to me and said, no. So after a few years of that, making good money and impressing all my friends, I was miserable because I wasn't making movies. So at that point, I said, this stinks, and started saying, is there another way? And that's when I started going and looking at small, low-budget independent films. Things that I could do myself, have more control, be involved. And the next thing I knew, I was standing on a set watching actors speak my lines and realizing, my God, that's what it's really like. And that's when I decided that that's where I was going to spend the rest of my career, whether I go broke or not, which that's part of the thing. But now you are so lucky. You are working in a time where the technology allows you to make something that's affordable that you could still get recognition. Now, I have a friend, I worked on as a co-director on this project. I don't recommend you do this. He's crazy. But we shot an entire movie in one night. 90-minute movie. This was the last movie John Ritter did. And it was a crazy idea, but we had like 6 directors in a big house, 23 actors, no script. And it was an experience, but he figured out how much money he could put on his credit card and he could make a movie himself. And that's what was so important. He actually made this movie, and you can go see it in Blockbuster, and he sold it. Now, he learned so much about the business. He called me the other day and says, I'm making another one. I said, oh, and one night? He says, no, I'm taking 3 days. It's one location, and I think I can do the whole thing for $30,000, but I have $160,000 in deferments. But deferments is like when you sell it, and everybody's real happy about that. He says, and it all takes place in one location with one actor. I said, so that's what he did. He said, all right, I have this much money. What can I do that I can make something that I can take it to a film festival? I can put it on an iPod. I can show it to someone. Because now with digital technology, when I made my first film, I had to go out and go run around the town. Who knows what short ends are? Okay, if you're a filmmaker, I had to run around town to all the different labs borrowing short-end films and hoping that when it got exposed, it worked. That's what's left when a film is over and they have like 100 extra feet. You buy it for half the price. Yeah. And you run around, you make these films in the telecine, which is transferring from film to videotape to edit. Was so expensive that a short film that I made was $30,000. You could make it today for $5,000 or $10,000. And do a better job, because the technology allows you to do it. So one of the things that my class, I'm bringing in that crazy guy who shot the film. He's going to come into my class and talk about what he does, how he finds money. He also was associate producer of What the Bleep Do I Know?
Oh.
And he'll tell you all about how that picture got off the ground. And we'll talk about a lot of low-budget stuff. You can make something. If you sit there and say, we used to say, all right, how much do I have on the credit? I got $10,000. Let's announce we're making a movie. Because you can do it if you want to do it. There is a way. If you sit there and say, I have this much money, what can I do? There is a way to do it. And that's kind of what they say. I love hearing what you were talking about because that makes me excited because that's really what I'm talking about is making something. You all have ideas and you say, and you have to go through the studio process of trying to get somebody to read your script. They don't return your phone calls. They don't even, you can't even get it in the mail. It comes back unopened. You know, the people won't talk to you. But so go out and make it yourself. And there are lots of film festivals around, a lot of pod festivals, I assume, are starting. And now, do not go to this until tomorrow. I'm putting this back up. But one of the things that he has helped me with is I have a lot of these movies, the little spec things, the commercials that I did that I couldn't get on YouTube because their density, they were too thick. And he's now told me how I can do it. And that's the thing, is I can now take my reel, my director's reel, put it links from this over to YouTube. Instead of people saying, oh, send us your reel, I say, just go to this link and you can watch the different clips. And that way I can put my own version instead of the producer's version.
Awesome. And the director's cut.
Director's cut.
There you go.
So anyway, my class is talking about writing for independent low budgets, how to write that material so that it can be done for a budget, but also how to find the money, how to go out and make it, and also how to do a better job. Okay? That's
cool.
Everything.
Well, that's lovely. Thank you. All right, and so then likewise, Doug and I are doing podcasting for writers. Really, it should read podcasting and new media and how to use that for writers.
But it made too long of a title. Yeah.
So obviously I'll do sort of the writing half of it and Doug will do, but we sort of blend because Doug writes as well and I do some tech things, really, I do. But I will let Doug tell you what the class is going to be about.
How many people have heard of podcasting? Oh, I love it. I love it. 3 years ago when I started podcasting, people went, huh? Pod? What? I don't have an iPod. What do you mean? I was one of the first 20 podcasters when it was created 3 years ago. In fact, I'm celebrating the third anniversary of my initial podcast this September 24th. As Jonathan was saying, one of the best things about the world we're living in right now, especially as creative people, is for the first time ever in the history of mankind, we have the ability to not only produce our own work, to create our own movies, to write our own books, we have a way to distribute them, in most cases, for free, for nothing. And not just in the U.S., and not just in the city, and not just in the state, globally. I have listeners to my podcast, now they must speak English, of course, because I only speak English. I have listeners in my podcast on every continent in the world, including Antarctica. And I know this because I actually made a CD to send on a research expedition boat down to Antarctica so they could have it for their radio station. Okay? You can do exactly the same thing. And that's what we're doing with podcasting writers. And I hope the term for writers doesn't scare off other creatives in the group, because the fact is podcasting can assist anyone in doing anything they want to do. I work with nonprofit groups. I work with businesses. I work with individuals. I work with everyone, and some way we can find a reason and a purpose for podcasting in their work. Because for me, the biggest thing that all of us need to do now, and I don't care whether you're a writer, a director, a producer, a programmer, an actor, a accountant, or whatever, the goal is attracting attention to yourself. Does anyone remember George Carlin's album, Class Clown? Now, I was probably six when it came out, but I've heard it, I've listened to it a lot. At one point in that album, he says, you know what? Why are you a class clown? The whole reason to be a class clown is attracting attention to yourself. And that's exactly what we're doing. I have actually formally called it now Carlin's Law of Attraction. And this is what I teach to all my podcasters. So with this class, we're going to teach you not only about the technology of podcasting, which, by the way, is getting easier every day. If you look up here, I have an iPod recording this session. In one case, I have another little recorder recording it. Record everything you do. We had someone here who just finished a book. She's going to be going out on book readings. Record them. Share them with more than just the 10 people or the 20 people or the 30 people that are reading. Share them with the world by putting them on a website like Your Reel and other things. You can share them with the world, and I really want to bring that home to you. It is not local. It is not national. We are talking global. If you look at the statistics from my website of where people come from, every continent in the world, okay? It is amazing when you first see that. So our goal in the class is to not only teach you the technology, at the end of the class, our goal is to have you producing your first episode of whatever podcast you want to do. It can be an audio podcast, a video podcast. It can be you reading from your book or reading your poetry or whatever you want to do. I have a woman I work with who's a storyteller. She's been storytelling for years, and we're just now starting to capture some of her work so that we can make CDs and put it on the internet and so on. Roseanne is going to talk to you about, in this class, about the writing aspects of it. The thing about podcasts is they don't have to be a half hour. They don't have to be an hour. And in fact, in most cases, they don't want to be an hour. Podcasts find their own length. If you have, I've been writing for 11 years, a column on careers. This is why I was able to jump into podcasting so quickly, as I had content, and it was like, oh, distribution method? Okay, and I jumped right in. Those columns are 700 words. That's a print limit that I write for the print magazine. Well, guess what? That's how long my podcast is. It comes in about 5 to 6 minutes, which there's a general good general rule for you. 700 words of printed text are about 5 to 6 minutes of reading if you're just basically doing a nice read of the piece. I'm trying to think of the look in the outline of our class, what else we go through there. But
that's basically the writing for what you come, we'll have you be reviewing ones that exist.
That's the other thing,
yes.
Have
you look at podcasting for research and how writers can use it to find all kinds of information to get what their story they're writing about, to get, you know, real things to use. We're going to look at it from all realms.
You ready to do the question and answer?
At this point, yeah, I was going to say, I was hoping we could have dance long enough for Pluto, but there you go. It's then it's summed up. So, really, we want to any questions, and then we'll do a little finish up at the end.
Yeah, me too.
Ooh, there are hands already.
Yeah, I like this.
I'm going to start over here.
She'll do the hand calling. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'm currently writing a column on the internet. It's kind of a Dear Abby or a twin site.
Oh, cool.
So, I've been wondering, how do I enlarge this? How do I get, I mean, do I try to go to print? Should I do, I have no idea what that would lend itself to.
The answer is yes. Okay? And I mean that seriously, too. In the world we're in today, it's not about either or. It is all about the and. Try to get it in print. Start doing it as a podcast. Maybe have it syndicated to other teen or tween websites. That'd be another issue you could do. You know, basically there are ways, very easy ways, you can syndicate your content through websites all over the world without any further action from you. You can basically give them a little file that you, when you post it one place, it updates it there, and then they just scoop it up and it shows up on their site. So don't think about either or. Now, I will say one thing about podcasting and online video and stuff that really surprised me when I was starting. I figured doing the audio version was simply another way of giving my existing readers a way to access the material. Mm-hmm. What I quickly discovered was two different worlds. There are readers and there are listeners, and very, very little crossover, which basically means I increased my readers slash listenership by about 2/3 just by putting in an audio.
And it strikes me right off the top of my head how cool it would be to listen to a kid's voice, should you have a child who could get to do this, reading a question, and then you reading the answer, and then that would give it some personality in the audio side.
And there's free technology today. You can sign up for free accounts like at GrandCentral.com for an open voice line that people call in, they leave their question on the phone. That gives you an MP3 file which you can include right into an audio show just by copying and pasting.
Wow.
So we do that a lot in podcasting. I'll let you call.
Yes,
so.
Sir.
Yeah, I have two questions. Okay.
First one is, start with Jonathan.
Start with Jonathan.
The first one is, the idea of independent film and doing your work out there and everything has been blown up by Sundance and what Sundance has.
Oh, let me first explain Sundance, because Sundance is not what it used to
be. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going
to say. Sundance used to be a place for independent filmmakers. You know, the guys who went out in the middle of the night and stole shots on the street they weren't supposed to be on. It became very chic. So now if you look at the films that get shown at Sundance, they star big stars, they're Miramax always has movies there. But there are other film festivals around the country that do fulfill that niche. Almost, there is a thing called Slam Dance. There's ones in New York. Actually, all you have to do is go on the internet and say film festival, and you will be stunned at how many. There even I just got a call from an actor who I used to work with, a brilliant actor who's now in construction business in Rhode Island. He's in Newport, Rhode Island, and his wife just got hired to run the Newport Film Festival. In coincide with the Newport Jazz Festival. And they said, and they were saying, oh, we're looking for movies, and they wanted, you know, and I, and that's a place, you know, you could, the, every major city has one. A friend of mine owns a nightclub in Albuquerque, New Mexico. They have a film festival where they actually, people submit scripts to shoot something in, I think, 1 weekend or something, and they give you the money and the cameras and equipment. They pick 5 people to go out and shoot these movies, and then they show the film festival. So you have to do your research. That's part of the things that I talk about in my class, is you can't rely on just what you know right now. You have to go out and research film festivals. Now, independent films do real well in film festivals because that's where they get a chance to go see. Now, I know a guy just shot a film up in Seattle, shot it for $300,000 to get it in the can. All the actors are people that you will see. They are people who have recurring roles on regular television shows. He had $300,000, so he got it in the can, and then he's raising the rest of the money to finish it up. He's submitting it to Sundance, knowing the odds of getting in are nil. But then he's going to go around to all the other ones. So everybody starts at Sundance because, oh, you would love to be in there, but that means you're competing against Miramax. Every studio has a low-budget division that sends movies to Sundance. And the big, there's a big film festival in Toronto that's
great. Austin's very big.
Yeah,
Boston's a big one.
But, okay, yeah, go ahead. All right, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm like a single.
But that's important to understand.
Yeah. No, I understand. I mean, that was the basis of the question, okay. So in a way that's helpful.
Good.
Just like in literature, in film, when you do an independent film that's not through a major studio, just like you publish self-publishing, it tends to get viewed by the industry differently. You don't have the same prestige. So my question is, has that shifted in independent film since Sundance was co-opted, and now all of those that used to be there have gone to all of these other festivals? Once you get out and you get recognized, which, you know, is a good example, is that prestige factor now returned to the independent film?
You know, that's an interesting question, because it's so funny. When I first came in this business, you know, you couldn't let people know you worked in television if you wanted to work in movie act. And that dynamic keeps changing. But now, it used to be a television actor would never be seen in a theatrical release movie. Now it's like, you know, look where Bruce Willis came from. I mean, you know, John Goodman used to do McDonald's commercials. You know, those lines don't, it's really, you can get to anybody and they don't have their, yes, the big studios they all want to be in business with the big stars because it makes them look good and there's bigger money, but everybody's looking for product. Now, there is more competition. Now, one of the people who's going to come to my class is the COO of Fox Home Entertainment. He acquires low-budget product, and he makes low-budget product. He will tell you what's being bought, and it changes. One day he told me, I went in and said, oh, we're looking for low-budget Westerns because it's a buy-through. So somebody made a Western for $100,000. They bought it because a lot of people were buying, young men of a certain age group, were buying DVDs direct, Westerns. So there suddenly was this thing, and then it dried up. And the market changes all the time. So if you're trying to chase an idea or a concept or tie the prestige, make your own prestige. Be your own person.
That's a great thing.
Believe in what you're doing, and the hell with them, because most of the time they don't know.
Well, and let me tag on to that. One of the people speaking in our class, it's so funny, because we're all looking at it true. Same thing, TV doesn't do movies, but it's all BS nowadays.
Yes.
We have a gentleman who runs a podcast called Goodnight Burbank, that's been all these lovely notes about it, and Wall Street Journal said it was the best podcast out there because of that, and he had to, you know, produce it entirely for free by himself for like a year and a half, once a week, but he's having a good time doing it. He got meetings at Disney, HBO, all these studios, one and a couple of agencies, wanted to meet him because the buzz, that stupid word.
And he created that.
He created it himself. He stars in it himself. Exactly.
It's about the audience it's not about the prestige.
Well, you know, you could go to my friend. He went to film festivals in places I didn't even know they had film festivals. But you know what?
Calabasas.
Well, he was in some places in Florida. You know, the Sarasota Film Festival in Sarasota, Florida. I didn't know they had one. But if he wanted, he could then put it on movie where of Sarasota. You know, so again, it's marketing. Blair Witch was all about marketing, you know, because it so happened when the second one came out.
We have a question down here. I'd like to go ahead and let's see if we can move on. We're stuck on one topic here. We won't speak about anything else.
Equipment. Yeah. Do you guys require equipment, or is it strictly lecture? Strictly lectures.
Okay. You won't need most of the stuff you'll end up needing already comes in most computers.
Yes. Okay. You can sit down with a laptop and use the built-in microphones to record a podcast.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to go beyond that? Yeah, eventually you'll want to go beyond that. I started out using a Lohner SM58 microphone and a little DJ mixing console to run it, plugged directly into the microphone input of my Mac. I mean, that's what I started with. Again, I see people recording right into the screen. USB microphones now are so cheap. You know, little headsets or whatever.
$50, $100.
And there's even nice condenser mics like they use on a radio station that are USB now. You actually plug them right into your USB port. They sit on your desk in a little pop filter. It's like you're in a radio station.
That's what we're talking about. The technology is in your favor now.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Exactly. It's now affordable. Yes.
Oh, to promote my book, I had the idea. In the book, I teach women how to judge a man by shoes to see if he's dateable.
I'm glad I'm behind the counter here.
Yeah, there's a lot of humorous content, so I had the idea to make a short YouTube video of me doing, I call it Shoe Talk Walk, kind of
Yes.
Yes. Do you have any suggestions for
me? I know a guy I could hook them up. He's a guy that does reality shows and all that.
Well, the thing I will say, and this goes for everybody who has a similar question, do it. Today.
Okay.
Go get your camcorder, go borrow a camcorder from a friend. YouTube, we've all seen the YouTube quality, okay? It ain't that great.
Yeah.
Okay, you could record it with a cell phone practically and have it work.
What that reminds me of is it's never been about the technology. Have you seen old silent films? Okay, it was the content. It was the message that was being transmitted that people hooked on. They wanted to see Charlie Chaplin because he was funny and they made them feel, you know, he made them feel okay in a bad time. So it was the content. It's what you create in your head. Who the hell cares what it looks like on the screen? Yes, ma'am.
You don't give it away. You basically, when people come to you with a contract that says, "I'll give you $100 for the right to the show," you laugh in their face. You and I mean that totally seriously.
But are you referring to people stealing it from the internet?
Taking your idea and then.
I've read articles about people. This guy who, might be a guy from YouTube, who is going to the different sites and snatching videos off those sites and then putting it all up on his site, and then he's got paid for it. And all those people are just like, he's getting paid for my stuff.
They get, well, and you know, the same thing applies to anyone who's taking any content and repurposing it for, basically they're selling ads on their site. That's how they're getting paid. They're not getting paid specifically for your work, but I understand that. And the fact is, so what? You'll make more. The point is, you are the star of your show. You are the focus of your show. And I will say this in a little bit, if someone is taking it from one site and putting it on another,
it's advertisement.
It's not that bad. Okay? Because what's our goal? What's our goal?
Attention.
Attracting attention to yourself. Right. Exactly.
And ask them to link to your site.
Yeah.
And before we leave that behind, let me not like pretend that you don't walk through town and pitch TV shows to people and they say, "Oh no, we don't want to do that right now," and a year later, I'll be darned, I have a show that's on a darn site like what you walked in and they said they didn't want. There's just, you have to share your ideas to sell your ideas, and it's part of the business. Yes, sir, right in front.
Yeah, so let's say you have a little video and you put it on YouTube, then what, you just wait for people to like it, or how does it catch on?
Well, first of all, traditional promotion's been around for thousands of years. You get it out there. First of all, being in YouTube, because it's a filter, because it allows people to search on certain keywords and certain tags, it's going to kind of float about in YouTube outside of your control anyway, because people are going to find it in different ways. The other thing you do, though, when you start a podcast, when you start putting stuff on YouTube, when you start doing anything like that is you tell your friends. You grab your mailing list and say, "Who do I know?" They tell two friends, and they tell two friends. You've heard the old commercial, right?
Mm-hmm. I have a follow-up.
Go ahead.
Yes.
What is your intent? What do you want to get?
Good question.
All right, for what though? You know, you just want people to look at you, or do you want to be an actor, or do you want
writer?
A writer. So, who do you want to see that stuff?
People who have a lot of money.
Well, people who have a lot of money for what?
People who would let me borrow their money.
You're in the wrong business.
He's a good writer.
What it becomes, it becomes an online portfolio.
Right.
That's exactly, I think that's where Jonathan is heading.
Right.
Yes.
You're building an online portfolio. You don't necessarily need, like Jonathan has clips. You have produced stuff. That, you know, when we're all starting out, we don't got nothing, guys. We got to create our own. Everybody is a producer. And you basically are producing you 1.0, okay? And that's why you're putting stuff on YouTube. And that's why you're also putting it in a podcast on YouTube. You have a Facebook site, right? Right? Who's on Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
You need to be on Facebook. It's got the juice right now. That could change down the road. You've got to be on Facebook. You've got to be on MySpace. The goal is to give people as many opportunities to stumble across you as possible. The term is serendipity.
And again, that's what our friend did with his thing. He wrote, starred in himself, filmed. He sent it out to all these places. That's how he got the meetings. It was a portfolio. He will make money, to addend to your question, when someone decides to sponsor it. And that is slowly happening. Different companies are now saying, you know, we have a friend who does product placement in, you know, traditional TV. And he also did this thing that I probably shouldn't advertise because I didn't think it's cheesy as heck, called Brawny Man Camp. And it's for brawny towels, and it's literally an infomercial on the web where you watch some brawny dudes get sent to brawny camp by their wives, and it's so badly written. And but people go there just cheesily to laugh at it, and, you know, it's brawny paid to film this thing to talk about their paper towels.
How many people...
If you can do a better thing that will make people think about paper towels but isn't that annoying, and that's what it's going to become. So different companies are going, oh, that's a podcast about shoes. Oh, well, darn, Cole Haan should sponsor
Bingo.
A podcast
There's your sponsor.
Right. About how to choose a man by his shoes and, you know, that sort of thing. So the money will, just like in TV, and, you know, it comes through eventually advertising, sadly. God, there's a bunch of questions. We want to fill everybody in. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I just want to know a little bit more about your class. You teach the class together, and it's online. Can you tell us a little bit more about the class?
We're gonna do, like, I teach a 1-hour drama class, and I make you write an outline by the end of the 10 weeks. So you're gonna review podcasts, you're gonna review each other's ideas about what would make a good podcast. You're all gonna produce at least a 5-minute audio or video recorded podcast by the time you're done. So you will have learned writing techniques and tips to make it a better and more engaging and quickly connecting thing.
And discover what you want to do.
That's and discover what is a good focus for you, because just like a spec script, when I teach that, you have to introduce yourself through this piece of product. You are letting people know who's going to come in the room if they read this script and now they're going to hire you. The podcast will do that for you as well, and then we'll get all the technical stuff, which on his own, Doug charges you his real money to come to your house and teach this to you. Costs a whole lot more than the tuition at UCLA. So it's kind of like getting private consultants for the price of one class. So you will end the class with the ability to completely produce at least a 5-minute piece on a weekly basis. Then it's up to you to keep it up.
Yeah.
Nutshell. Next thing, yes.
What if you actually make something that's kind of a fan of a commercial that's already out there, like the MasterCard thing? Do you have to get rights for that? Or
that's legal farce, satire. It's okay.
Parody is protected speech.
Parody is acceptable. Yes. Back here.
Jonathan, yes. The script that I've been working on is My Story,
yeah.
And I'm wondering if you could give me advice on how to sell it, but to be involved in the making of the film.
Okay, that's basically what my class is about. And without taking up everybody's time, is I will be happy to talk to you after the class.
Okay.
In fact, one of the other teachers wrote me an email. She's a poetry teacher at Colorado, and she's on the internet, and she's the same question, exact same question. You're doing the right thing. Have you completed the script, or you're working on it?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes. Yay. Yes.
You can't do anything unless you have a completed script.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's...
Well, you can wing it. Well, I mean, no. Yeah. I didn't say
that. You used to be able to talk your way into a development deal.
Yeah.
There is no more development
fund. No.
But I will talk to you after class.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, along the lines of that question, I'm a musician, but I'm taking it jump into like making a movie idea. Just for
great.
How crazy is it to take that idea? But I have a whole team assembled doing animated movie. Like
great idea. I mean, you should try and figure out how to do it. Because you have two ways of doing it. You can go to existing companies that finance that stuff and stand online with everybody else, or you go out and try and figure out how to do it.
Too many people I trust that are talented.
Right. Yeah, anybody see the movie Big Picture with Kevin Bacon? Yeah. You know, it's about a guy who came out of film school, and he ended up losing sight of what he was in because he got caught up in it. In the end, he got back to where he was making movies where instead of a dolly, they used a shopping cart and a camera.
Yeah.
You find a way, because then it's yours. And then you don't have to sit around and wait for somebody to pick you.
Right. For animation, frederator.com.
Frederator.com.
I've worked in animation, worked for Disney.
F-R-E-D-E-R-A-T-O-R.com. They produce a lot of shows for Nickelodeon and other and Cartoon Channel, but they also support individuals. In fact, there's a weekly podcast called Frederator.com where they select the best animations submitted to them and put them out in their podcast with full credit to you.
See,
and all that stuff.
What he's proving is that if you really want to do it, and if you're focused and determined, you can do it. Go out and do it. Don't wait for somebody. You can do the whole thing of standing in line at ABC or HBO or Paramount Universal and wait till your turn or get some agent to talk to you. Or go out and make something and get them to see what you're making. You can get their attention that way.
To go back, you said it's not about development deals. Development deals are dead. Forget it. You got to have a product to show people. They're honestly
don't
not going to buy a script.
Show me.
Even Stephen Boshko can't get another development deal.
Thank you.
Okay, let me announce quickly. We have 5 minutes left. We're going to try to get as many new questions as possible, and we're perfectly happy. I hope to speak for Jonathan. We'll speak a little if we have to leave the room.
We'll have to go out in the courtyard or something.
Well, we're gladly to chat later, but let's try to get a couple more in. Yes, ma'am.
Podcasting.
It's like what?
So you do the short for the
trailer.
The trailer.
First thing you put online is the trailer.
Yep. Are you saying that people would agents would actually go on there?
I don't want to say that agents. The point is you're going to be striking a wide number of people. And remember, we can somewhat work backwards now. The fact is, if you have something that's viral, you've heard that term before, something that's really, really popular, someone's going to come looking for you. Because you've got an audience they want to talk to.
But how would they know that you have an audience?
Because of the buzz. You start getting talked about, it starts getting... My friend Hayden, Goodnight Burbank, was a web pick of the week in TV Guide magazine, the print magazine.
They see, they're scouring for all this stuff.
How many people have heard of Prom Queen real quick? Anybody hear Prom Queen? Do you know who's executive producing Prom Queen? Michael Eisner. Okay? Prom Queen is a 90-second daily soap opera. Okay?
Online.
If that gives you any indication of where this whole thing is going, that's something that's going on.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Quick question about ownership. What I want to ask you is about copyright. Like everything else, copyright is evolving, both within Library of Congress and out, because they have Creative Commons now.
Exactly.
Right? One of the questions I'm one, what do you think about the Creative Commons copyright approach and being able to control your own work? People
Well, under Creative Commons, Creative Commons is an alternative copyright system that allows you to grant specific rights to other people. You can say, you know what, make derivatives of this, or use it as a stance, but you got to credit me, or no commercial use of this product. You can literally mix and match all the different aspects of the copyright. And what it does, it gives you some flexibility beyond the typical copyright, which is, I own it, you can't do anything without my say-so. Now, I will admit, all of my stuff, all my podcasts are released under strict copyright, merely because I don't state anything else, so therefore that's the default on them. Now, do I hassle people about using my stuff? No, I would just prefer people do knock on my door and say, hey, can I use this or can I repurpose this over here? If you're in a system like where you're doing mashups or mash videos or stuff like that, the Creative Commons basically says to them, I'm the owner of the work, and if money ever gets made, I get some of that money, but I'm going to offer it up to you and say, what can you add to this? What value can you add to what I've done? And so it really depends on your own personal beliefs and what do you want to do with your product. Do you have something that seems to be mashable with something else that can be kind of added onto? And then in that regards, you can release. Like I put photos on Flickr, and they're all under Creative Commons license. So people can actually use them, non-commercial, share alike, stuff like that. So
2 minutes, one more question, crowd, and then...
Oh, now there's no question. Why? Come on!
Well, that's true.
Shouldn't have said that.
Well, it's 2:09, so we will wrap it. If you want to ask any stuff, let us know if we need to leave.
Weltrite.com is our website.
And
Jonathan's website, truly93.blogspot.com.
This was a panel discussion from the UCLA Extension Writers Program Annual Writers' Fair. For more information on the program, visit uclaextension.edu/writers. For more information on the podcast, visit weltrite.com/CIP. That's WELCHWRITE.com/CIP. You can also send your questions and comments to CIP@weltrite.com.